and welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us on the line is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Somewhat disappointing this time out, Mickey. Bad weather preventing you and I from having our annual watering hole get-together in Toronto at the PDAC.
Well, it was a bit unusual. We had, for 2 days, Friday and Saturday, I was trying to get to Toronto. And the first day I got shut out because my connection in Dallas, there was freezing rain there and the airport shut down. And then overnight we got about 10 inches of snow in Albuquerque, and they shut down the airport there on Saturday morning. Mm. So basically, I couldn't get to PDAC to make my talk, and I was going to have to come in a day or two late, and I just bagged it and stayed in the nice sunny Albuquerque because it snowed 7 inches at the farm, and 2 days later, it was all gone.
Ah, so you had a nice change there. But I know that you'll be passing through this area in the not-too-distant future, so we will get a chance to hook up face-to-face. Meantime, we are continuing our look at past bubbles that have burst and the lessons that can be learned. We've looked at rare earth elements, graphite, and lithium. Today, area plays that began in 2010, namely gold fever in the Yukon and Colombia. The backdrop, a long stretch of rising gold prices leading up to those gold rushes. Where do you want to begin on this one, Mickey?
Well, we'll begin by saying this was the talk that I was scheduled to give at PDAC in the Newsletter Writers Symposium called A Bevy of Bubbles Blown Up and Burst, and we were going to do the talk and then come out with the musing right after that. So we kind of put that stuff on hold. But, yeah, these area plays, and unlike most area plays where it's a region or a district, these two we are going to talk about were countrywide or province-wide. Mm-hmm. The first one was in Colombia, and there had been in the late 2000s, mid to late 2000s, a giant deposit there found by Anglo Gold called La Colosa, and a multi-million ounce gold deposit. After that, Colombia kind of became the flavor for a while, based on its geology, and it's, of course, on the Ring of Fire, and it has a lot of historic gold production. Mm-hmm. If memory serves, it leads Latin America in historic gold production, but it never had any exploration. Modern day, and most of the mines are small, little vein, high-grade underground vein mines. So the juniors started flooding in, and in 2009 there was a significant gold discovery in a place called California Gulch, basically in the Medellin area of central Colombia. And that discovery was made by a company called Ventana Gold, and it generated a staking rush all over Colombia. So all of a sudden, Colombia, there were juniors rushing in, and I don't really know how many were, but I dare say it was probably somewhere between 50 and 100. Not long after that, by November of 2010, a private company called AUX, led by Eki Batista, at the time the world's richest man, a Brazilian entrepreneur, venture capitalist, acquired Ventana and also eventually acquired a couple other juniors that had plays further downstream in California Gulch. Mm-hmm. And there became this crazy staking rush, and there was one company at the Marmata mine that went public. Now, it's since rolled back, but if you looked at its equivalent, if you take the 25-to-1 rollback into account, this company at one time had a share price of about $55 mm-hmm. a share. It trades today at 33 cents. And with $180 million in debt that it can't even service its interest. There have been a couple other discoveries, significant, although be it very low-grade, gold, copper, porphyry. That stock at one point was 2.25. It now trades something on the order of about 11 or 12 cents. So you see these parabolic rises and falls. In the meantime, Anglo Gold has bagged out of Colombia, postponed the development of La Colosa. There has been one other potential success. There's a company that has made a major and high-grade gold discovery there that looks is at the PEA stage, preliminary economic assessment stage, and that looks like that is good deposit.
Okay.
So once again, however many juniors came in, we've seen three small companies get taken out essentially along the same trend of a deposit, and then one other company that looks like it could potentially be successful.
Yeah, a quote from your friend Brent Cook in commenting on the Colombia Gold Rush. This is from an interview back in 2010, Mickey. He said, just like the Yukon, there's so much gold out there in Colombia that any company can go in and acquire a project, but 90% of them are not going to be viable. And certainly, you mentioned a number of stock prices there, and that shows just how right that was. A lot of them weren't viable, were they?
No, they're not. That's the way these bubbles work, you know, that 95% or better of the companies will fail. And it's interesting in this regard because it became a rush into Colombia, and that's kind of the difference. You know, we've seen these rushes historically that have really set the markets on fire, but never have we seen something that included an entire country.
An interesting story on how the Yukon Gold Rush started, Mickey. I'm reading that a penniless and persistent prospector by the name of Sean Ryan kicked it all off, and at the time he was living in a shack.
Well, that is true that Sean Ryan was a prospector, and he was living in a shack, and he was a mushroom hunter at the time. But this whole thing got kicked off after a discovery in the Yukon. Again, in 2009 or early 2010, a company called Underworld Resources got taken out. Now, I have to say that Sean Ryan would probably take credit for that discovery, but it was based on soil sampling, and in the Yukon, it's a bit of a geologic curiosity because the glaciers did not come down, even though it's way far north, 63 degrees north or something like that. The glaciers, this is unglaciated terrain, but it has a very thick soil cover. So there was actually a PhD geologist, a close friend of mine named Ricardo Presnell. And Ricardo, with Kennecott in the 90s, mid to late 1990s, discovered this or worked on this idea that you could do this deep profile soil sampling with augers, and you essentially auger down a couple of meters, perhaps, to the rock where the soil starts to become rock, called the sea horizon, and you sample that, and you're essentially getting a sample of bedrock. Now, he employed Sean Ryan at the time, and so the discovery was made by Underworld, and Ricardo was the chief geologist, and Sean Ryan was working for them. So I would actually attribute the discovery to both guys, but certainly Ricardo was the brains behind it.
Okay.
Anyway, to make a long story short, Kinross acquired Underworld's saddle deposit in March of 2010, contained about 1.1 million ounces. To this day, it still contains 1.1 million ounces, and Kinross has written off their investment in Underworld. But what it did was kicked off another of these area rushes, and again, the entire Yukon, not the Dawson District, or the White River District, whatever you want to call it, where this discovery was made, south of Dawson. It kicked off a province-wide rush. And even to this day, I think there's still 40 companies with Yukon projects, most of which have failed or dormant or postponed. There were two significant discoveries, one in north-central Yukon, by a company that is was composed of geologists who had worked in the Yukon for years and years and years, and they've made a Carlin-type discovery. Unfortunately, it's very remote. It's 100 kilometers from the nearest road. It's on a cirque, a glacial, at very high
altitude
elevations. And this part of the Yukon has been glaciated, but it's very remote, helicopter supported, a significant discovery, but yet so far and so remote, so far from infrastructure. Real problem with Yukon is the infrastructure, the remoteness, and of course the climate. You've got basically a 3 or 4 month field season at best. There was another discovery made, this one again by soil sampling by Sean Ryan, but in an area that had been discovered in, again, the mid-1990s, so it was kind of a recycled thing. And this company has a probably nearer-term deposit, series of deposits. There's been some big money come into this company lately from some well-known moneyed financier types with success in the past. Out of Vancouver. But once again, we're looking at new mines of 5 to 15 years to development. And so the whole Yukon thing blew up very, very quickly. Interestingly enough, a company that Sean Ryan founded went public in late 2010. It merged with another junior. It hit a high of about $2.45 immediately, and then did the parabolic topping and then the exponential fall. That company now sells for somewhere about 11 cents. It raised, at the time, it raised $53 million in late 2010. It spent $29 million on exploration. Now all of that $29 million has been written off, and it's got somewhere on the order of $21-22 million right now. It's essentially a shell.
Do you play these area rushes at all, Mickey? Because it sounds like when they do happen, fever grips everybody and the pack rushes in. And it doesn't matter what the company is, for there's that brief, very brief time period where everybody kind of moves up quite suddenly. Is there a strategy that one can use to get in and get out quickly?
Well, I have played two of the five area rushes because I got in quickly, and because I was aware that perhaps they were coming or there was a buzz on the street. So
right.
I got in very early on the rare earth bubble.
Yep.
And essentially, over the course of a couple of years, made most of my net wealth that continues today. I was lucky enough at the time to pick four companies, and of the 200 juniors that started out, those four are the only four that ever have gotten a New York Exchange market listing.
Right,
so,
right.
So I got in early on the right companies. In graphite, I did the same thing. I picked one company, and I picked it early, became a pre-IPO shareholder, and it is the only company with an operating graphite mine at this point. I did not get in early in lithium, so I
right.
stayed out. I did not get in early on Columbia or the Yukon, so I didn't play in the game. So the thing is, if you get in early when these things are happening, you can make a lot of money,
right.
but you've got to pick the right companies.
Yep.
And fortunately, I've picked the right companies. A lot of people get in after the buzz and they buy high,
yep.
and they don't succeed, so
and they lose a lot of money.
You just got to get in early and get out early. The thing about these bubbles that I found is the companies are no more successful or less successful than everything else that goes on in the junior sector. For instance, 95% of the juniors are eventually going to fail. Doesn't matter whether you're in a bubble or not, they're going to fail. The difference in bubbles is evaluations go exponential and then end up going parabolic. So the ups and downs are an order of magnitude higher than most other companies.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up on that note. Of all the bubbles burst for us, is that it, Mickey? What do you want to talk about next time out?
Well, I think we're actually done with the bubbles,
okay.
So we'll let that lie, and I'm not really sure what we're going to do next. I'm on my way to Hong Kong next week.
Mm-hmm.
I'll speak at Minds and Money, and we will revisit when I return in a couple of weeks, and I'm sure that I'll come on something in Hong Kong that's of interest, and let's talk about that.
Okay, looking forward to it. Mickey, thanks very much, and travel safe.
All right, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com, and you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.